Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. When you think of Great Britain, what do you think of? The greatest European empire the world has ever seen? The pinnacle of white artistic achievement as personified in the sublime painters of the Royal Academy a century or two ago? Shakespeare? Wordsworth? Dante Gabriel Rossetti? Conan Doyle? The great scientists Maxwell, Newton, Wallace, Darwin? Edward Elgar? The British Museum? Stonehenge? Well, if you thought of any of those things, any of the jewels of white European culture that the British Isles have given us, well, you're behind the times, man. You're out of it. Let me tell you about the new Britain that's been built in just the last few decades. Just yesterday, a young white woman who lives in Coventry, England, Sammy Sunter, a mother of two young sons, was driven from her home by blacks, who splashed paint and feces on her door, plastered anti-white graffiti, and left notes threatening violence, telling her, in no uncertain terms, to get out now, whitey, while you still can. Here are some exact quotes from the notes Miss Sunter found in her letterbox. Black power. Don't stay too long, or else. We are watching you, white bitch. Africa rules. These flats are for black sisters and brothers. Willenhall is black, so F off. Sammy Sunter and her two sons, ages 2 and 5, were forced to leave their new home as they no longer felt safe there. That's the new Britain that's been built since the Second World War. Ironically, Coventry, where this white British woman was driven from her home by blacks, was a major manufacturer of munitions during that war, and was the victim of one of the worst German bombing raids on Britain, in which more than 500 people were killed. The Britons who were building munitions there, and those who were sent to kill Germans in Europe, were told that they were fighting to keep Britain British. Little did they know what they were really fighting for. For the Second World War was really a war against all white peoples, and the invasion of Britain by blacks from her former colonies was part of a deliberate plan by the real victors in that terrible conflict. Coventry, being filled with blacks, is just a tiny part of that deliberate plan. Witness Rotherham, where non-white immigrants have been settled in large numbers, crowding out white British people. A large number of these are those usually called Asians in Britain, but who are mostly Pakistanis and other Muslims from the Indian subcontinent. In Rotherham, between 1997 and 2013, for more than 16 years, more than 1,400 white children, most of them girls and some of them not yet in their teen years, were abducted, raped, tortured, prostituted, and passed around for sexual entertainment by Pakistani men, many of whom acted as if they literally owned their young white victims. And that figure of 1,400 is now considered, even by the very politically correct authorities in Britain, to be a very conservative estimate. When complaints were made to the authorities, again and again, for years, the investigations went nowhere. They went nowhere not because of lack of evidence, for evidence there was in abundance, but because the investigators and those charged with protecting children in Rotherham were afraid of being perceived as racist. Being perceived as racist is a sure kiss of death for a political or bureaucratic career in the new Britain. Years later, an official investigation discovered that pleas for help from white children and parents were sidelined, quote, for fear of giving oxygen to racism, close quote. When a 13-year-old girl bravely reported what was happening to her to police, the response was aloof derision and nothing was done. An investigator into the scandal reported that white victims were routinely treated with contempt. Also treated with contempt was a delegation of white mothers, each of whom had a daughter or daughters being routinely raped by this organized non-white gang. The mothers' delegation pleaded with the authorities to do something because the police were unresponsive. This was in 2002, after 5 years of such abuse. Still, nothing was done for some 8 years. And now that this horrible abuse network and its official enablers have been exposed, after almost 20 years have passed, not a single official has been charged with a crime, and most of the perpetrators are still walking the streets freely. And Rotherham is not unique. There have been similar sex abuse cases involving non-white gangs sexually using young white girls in Rochdale, Derby, and Oxford. And those are only the cases that have come to light. After the decade-long cover-up in Rotherham, is it really reasonable to assume that the anti-white governing class in Britain has acted any differently elsewhere? As I've been saying, this new, increasingly non-white, and dangerous for whites Britain has come into existence since the end of the Second World War. We've all been told that Britain won that war, but that's not true. Britain lost that war just as surely as Germany did. The whole white world lost that war because the side that won was the Jewish side. Britain lost the war because she, like America, was tricked by corrupt leaders and Jewish media oligarchs into fighting on the wrong side, the communist side, the side of international finance, the anti-white side. And very soon after that war, Britain lost her world-spanning empire. And just a few years after that, she lost Britain herself. In the centuries before the war, we of the West foolishly allowed Jews to control our banks and other financial institutions, and our newspapers, and later our film studios and electronic media of news and entertainment. The Jewish minority grew very wealthy and influential while exploiting us and controlling our media, and the Jewish power structure that resulted was very powerful indeed. That power structure was the real and only victor in World War II. And that power structure made a decision after that war that white people were dangerous when they got out of control, like Germany did after 1933. And they decided that we had to be eliminated one way or another. And the same Jewish media influence is responsible for creating the climate in which white officials and citizens alike are afraid to speak out against the invasion of their country, or even to do anything about abuse of their own children, for fear of being called racist. In some cases, it's more than fear. In some cases, the menticidal poison administered by the Jews has taken root so deeply that white people, possibly including officials like the ones in Rotherham, actively hate their own race and willingly work for its destruction. And if that means that a few thousand white teenagers are raped and impregnated by South Asian Muslim monsters, well, that's a small price to pay for the final triumph of diversity and the end of the evil whites. The spread of that mental and spiritual poison is the reason Coventry, England isn't safe for white families. It's the reason 12-year-old white girls are being abducted and raped and sexually enslaved almost with impunity in Rotherham, Rochdale, Derby, and Oxford. And once Great Britain is far from the only place this is happening. It's happening all over the formerly white world. After the Second World War, every nation of white civilization has opened its borders to floods of immigrants from the Third World. France, Holland, Germany, Italy, Spain, Greece, the United States, and all the rest are awash in non-whites. And far along the road of national dissolution and literal extirpation of the race that founded them. In every case, Jewish money, media, and influence work to convince the population and corrupt the leadership into accepting the eradication of white people. A false moral paradigm is promulgated by these media, in which it is immoral and career suicide to resist the brown tide, or point out the Jewish influence behind it all. Recently, I watched a grinning black PBS commentator, Tavis Smiley, interview self-hating white demographer William H. Fry of the liberal think tank, the Brookings Institution. Both Smiley and Fry gloated about the fact that the white American population is aging, not replacing itself, and will soon begin a precipitous decline that will leave our children a small minority in the nation we founded. Fry laughed at the older generation of whites who are so pathetically behind the times that they actually object to their dispossession, about which he assures us with a wry smile, nothing can be done. He tells us that the upcoming generation embraces its own annihilation enthusiastically and is marrying interracially and dating interracially. Diversity is their thing, Fry gushes, and Smiley agrees, adding, you can't buck the trend. Whites who complain just don't get it. They're out of it. Fry and Smiley truthfully tell us that even if immigration were totally halted tomorrow, it would not have much effect on the ultimate outcome. The natural increase in non-white numbers and the suicidally low fertility of whites would doom us just the same. The important thing, according to Fry, is making sure that the young blacks and browns who already outnumber our sons and daughters in the schools get more funding so they can get a better education and training to succeed economically. Like Fry's Brookings Institution, the Council on Foreign Relations, or CFR, is a quintessentially establishment organization. Its Foreign Affairs magazine is often where new ideas are floated before they are forcibly imposed on Americans. The pampered academics at Foreign Affairs have recently published an article bemoaning the fact that even though they believe that almost no Americans are racist these days, and even though discrimination has been totally outlawed, for some mysterious reason, economic outcomes are still radically different for blacks, mestizos, and whites. The reason, the CFR tells us, simply has to be institutional racism in industries and governments. The structure of these institutions themselves, they say, is inherently discriminatory even without any racist intent on the part of any human being at all. The CFR says nothing at all about the huge income disparities between Jews and everyone else, of course. To the CFR, these unequal outcomes cannot possibly be due to inherent racial differences, differences in values, behavior, or inclinations, since such differences cannot possibly exist. So, just as medieval theologians worried over imaginary beings or mental constructs like transubstantiation, so the liberals at the CFR have created a new imaginary monster to fight: institutional racism. And they propose a crusade against it, naturally requiring an army of bureaucrats and researchers and enforcement commissars to do whatever is necessary to ensure equal outcomes. since outcomes can never be equal, something that is surely known to those at the very top of the establishment food chain. This is a formula for an ever-increasing anti-white tyranny that goes far beyond anything we have yet experienced. Verily, the war on institutional racism may yet eclipse the war on terror in its eternal battles at infinite cost over unlimited time forever and ever. Amen. The smug self-assurance of Smiley and Fry and the mammon-sucking academics at the CFR is not justified, however. All across America and across the entire Western world, there is a growing awareness of what has happened to our civilization since World War II, and there is a growing white racial consciousness. This growing awareness shows itself strongly in the comments section of hundreds upon hundreds of establishment websites, even the CFR's own site and those owned by Jewish media moguls. Again and again, I see racially aware white men and women in the plurality of commenters on many subjects I research daily for this radio program. In some cases, racially awakened whites and people aware of destructive Jewish activities absolutely dominate the discussions. It's gotten so bad from the Jews' perspective, and good from our perspective, that numerous controlled media sites have turned off their comment sections entirely or started severely censoring them. I don't think this awakening can be stopped. The preposterous beliefs imposed upon our people cannot hold in the face of the nightmare reality that stares us in the face every day. We must dedicate our lives to furthering that awakening. We must keep pushing, keep speaking out, keep fanning the flames of resistance, and never give up. Nature is on our side. Truth is on our side. We can build a new society, a new world, with a wholly new value system whose central purpose is the survival and progress of our people. I hope that my program today has helped you see the world the way it really is. I hope it has inspired you to act. We must work every day of our lives to help our fellow whites see the world in racial terms and organize so we can survive and prosper in the hard times ahead. We're going to help our people. We're going to educate our people. We're going to come up with creative ways to awaken our people. We're going to create publications that will be like nothing ever seen before in the cause of white awakening. We're going to do what it takes. Please join, or if you cannot join, financially support the National Alliance to the very best of your ability. Together, we will build a better world. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance, founded by William Luther Pierce in 1970. This program is published every week at whitebiocentrism.com and nationalvanguard.org. You can join and support us by visiting natall.com, that's natall.com, or write to National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. We welcome your support, your inquiries, and your help in spreading our message of hope to our people. Once again, that address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you to keep on thinking free.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth. For blood and for soil.